Kennedy, of course, when he went in 1961 as president, he and Johnson backed the South Vietnamese government both overtly and covertly. And the real story here, George, and we talk about it in the book, and pardon me for talking so much about the book, but I think that's what we're here to talk about.
Well, that's what you're here about, because it does uncover, I think, the root of this evil, and that was leaving those men behind.
That's right. Well, it all starts, the story starts at the Bay of Pigs, of all places, when Jack Kennedy and his brother Robert sent these freedom fighters. They were Cubans. They weren't Americans, but they were from, many of them lived in America. They sent the Cubans in there to overthrow Castro. And just at the critical point in the invasion, Kennedy backed away from providing air cover. The freedom fighters were overwhelmed. They were imprisoned. And ultimately, Jack Kennedy and Bobby Kennedy paid like $50-60 million, which was a lot of money in 1962, to get these prisoners back. They had to buy them back, to ransom them back. And Fidel Castro went to the Vietnamese, and he of course was a blood brother of the Vietnamese, a fellow communist, and he told them, look, Kennedy, the Kennedy brothers paid for these prisoners. In your war with America, you capture as many Americans as you can, and at the end of the war, America will pay you to rebuild the war damage just like they paid us to rebuild the damage from the Bay of Pigs invasion.
Yep.
And that's where it all started, and the Vietnamese developed their own plan to use the prisoners in the same way. And that's what Henry Kissinger faced at the Paris Peace Accords. He negotiated an accord finally to end the war, and it was to pay the North Vietnamese $4.75 billion to rebuild their country in return for the prisoners, just like Castro had done at the Bay of Pigs.
So
here's what happened.
Okay, go ahead.
We got half the prisoners back at Operation Homecoming. And then they said, okay, where's our money? And just at that time, Watergate exploded in this town, Washington, and Nixon and Kissinger could not and did not pay the money to the Vietnamese. They kept the prisoners, and they've still got them.
Now, did we know at that time, did our administration know at that time that those prisoners were held back?
Absolutely. And we prove this beyond, pardon me, but we prove it beyond any doubt. For the first time, we show how the U.S. government knew and the fact that the U.S. government did know. And that's been one of the great mysteries, one of the great secrets of the Vietnam War. Did the U.S. government know? And anybody who, any objective analysis of what we present from the intelligence documents that we have uncovered at the National Archives and at the Library of Congress, we knew and we left them anyway.
Elizabeth, tell us how you got involved in this story.
Well, in 1966, when my father was shot down over Dien Bien Phu, I can recall that clearly when the Air Force came to the house, as they did, and told Mother that he was only missing and that everything that could be done was being done to find him. And it started with that. We certainly believed it. My mother, my five brothers and sisters, we were a very strong military Air Force family, and we believed what they told us. And it wasn't till sometime in the early 80s that I actually received an invitation to attend a government meeting with other family members in Washington, D.C. And I came, to be honest with you, George, I came because, one, I'd never been to D.C. before, and also because there were other family members there, and I thought it might be rather healing, if you will, to be around other family members. But instead of coming and consoling each other, what I learned from these other family members who had questioned and questioned and questioned their cases was that there were so many questions, the answers were not forthcoming, the information was not forthcoming. And it affected me so that 2 years later I closed my law practice in Florida and moved to D.C. and stayed for 20 years, first to work on my father's case. And certainly that is the single most important case to me.
Of course.
But I approached it as my father would approach it, and that is that you care about America's military. And in his letter to me, I was 11 years old when I got it, he said, yes, I know you miss me and you care about me being here, but think of the others that serve with me. And that is the approach that I've taken for decades now. We looked for all of these men. It wasn't that I looked in intelligence reports repeatedly for Dad's name, though of course I would, but we looked at the intelligence on all of these men. And, George, there is so much of it. And this book goes into it, dozens and dozens and dozens of stories that come out of Southeast Asia telling of our men.
And when you two get into some of the satellite photographs of things that American soldiers have left as markers, just to notify us that they're out there, it's absolutely, tear came to my eye. It was shattering.
George, as you know, on the cover of the book, and maybe when we go to break, some of your listeners can go to Amazon.com, not to buy the book, but to look at the cover. It's an enormous crime. Just pull it up, and you'll see there is a satellite image. It was taken in 1988 on the cover of the book, and it can only have been this image shows a code in a rice paddy only known to U.S. pilots. And this guy or guys put this thing down in a rice paddy in northern Laos in 1988. There have been other escape and evasion codes that the satellites have picked up well into the 1990s, where men are putting their names down, their secret codes, their secret authenticators, escape and evasion codes only they could know. And those codes all say, get me out of here.